Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, IMF economist David Cody talks about how developing countries can strengthen their social safety nets.
It's important that the policy process focuses not on we want to increase revenues, but we need to increase key spending to provide services that are crucial for the population.
For many countries, broadening access to basic services like education and healthcare is fiscally daunting. Economies in developing countries are often informal for the most part, making it difficult for governments to collect the taxes they need to pay for these programs. David Cody is a social spending expert in the IMF's Fiscal Affairs Department and author of Creating Fiscal Space, an article featured in the December 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine. My conversation with David Cody started with him explaining how informal economies work.
Informal economies are very closely linked to the level of development. The word informal is a catch-all for many things, but in essence, what the formal economy is at the early stages of development, people are working in self-employed type of activities, farming and so on. These are activities that have very volatile sources of income. The people in these activities are often low-skilled, but they also have multiple sources of income. This makes it extremely difficult for tax administrations to monitor income and to base taxation on income. So that's essentially the essence of the income side of the tax problem. On the consumption side, a lot of the goods might be non-traded through markets, are in very local markets that never go through very formal change that could be subject to, say, a value-added tax. So these are, again, challenges for consumption taxes, which in particular at the early stages of development are crucial for raising revenue.
And so in this article that you published recently in Finance and Development magazine, you suggest that, for governments to start spending on social programs, they essentially have to hit a 15% of GDP tax revenue target. So how reasonable a target is that for low-income countries? And I mean, what happens at 15% of GDP that makes it possible for governments to spend this money?
15%, of course, is a kind of a crude threshold. But it's a threshold that we see that after 15% of tax revenues as a share of GDP, you find that countries have enough capacity to finance key public goods like education, health, infrastructure. And the public goods are key for growth. So around 15%, things seem to take off. As you increase above that, they take off more. Below that, it seems to be very difficult for countries on average to be able to move to a new stage, a new path for development. So about a half of countries, low-income developing countries, are below the 15% threshold. So there's a jump to be made there. But even after that, they want to keep raising their revenues. Emerging market economies is about a third. So significant room for improvement. But not to be too disillusioned, we kind of will look at, have countries in the low-income and middle-income brackets actually managed to raise revenue? A good rule of thumb is it's difficult to raise revenue as a share of GDP by one percentage point every year on a sustained basis. In the paper, we identify 9 countries, some from low income, some from middle income, who managed to do, say, above 4 or 5 percentage points in a 4 or 5 year period. But there weren't many. It was like 9 countries. Mm. So it can be done, but it's not an easy task. It needs a sustained and systemic approach to raising the tax.
Yeah, but for those countries that have actually managed to do it, have we seen some kind of tangible impact of that extra tax revenue?
What we definitely see in these countries is that as tax revenues goes up, spending, including social spending, education and health and social protection, also go up. That spending has been shown to be, in general, to be really crucial, not just for growth, but for inclusive growth. So, for example, for decades, we've had plenty of evidence that education and health, and in particular, filling the gaps in education and health, is key to generating sustained growth.
But it seems that it's not only the amount of spending on social programs, but it's also the quality of spending. I mean, if you look at some countries are actually spending quite a bit of money toward education, for example. I'm thinking South Africa as an example in sub-Saharan Africa. they're not really moving the needle. I mean, they're not really seeing the benefit of all that spending on education.
Without that, I mean, there are individual countries who clearly will have certain challenges, and South Africa has its own history, its own challenges. But you've kind of hit a very important point there, which is raising taxes is not an end in itself. The end here is not the taxes, it's the spending. But there's no point scaling up spending unless it's going to actually impact on the outcomes, the social outcomes, the growth that you want to. There's plenty of evidence of that relationship, but there's also plenty of evidence that spending can be inefficient. We see, for example, at the same level of spending, very different level of outcomes in countries. So that puts up at the forefront the idea that spending increases need to be mapped out carefully. In other words, increasing spending very fast is not necessarily a great thing unless you have the capacity and the framework to actually spend that well. This is true in advanced, emerging, and developing. There's plenty of evidence, for example, for health, where the studies have shown that 30 to 40% of the money seems could potentially be more efficiently used. And so it's not just a developing country issue. It's across the board. These sectors, they have services they have to provide. Setting things up so that those services have an impact is really important. But of course, after all of this, what you also need is things well beyond the tax and transfer system, which is you need a macroeconomic framework, which the fund is heavily involved with in countries, to make sure that there's a growth environment there in the first place, that the other complementary policies are there. But just focusing on intermediate outcomes like education and health is the first step in that. Still room for improvement, without doubt, especially on the, for example, the learning side or actual health outcome side. A lot of variation suggesting room for really improved practices for how you deliver these services.
And your paper talks a lot about the benefits of a value-added tax. So how do value-added taxes work, and how much pushback would a government expect to get when they're trying to implement a value-added tax?
A value-added tax is well known now as a kind of a revenue machine. It's an efficient way of raising revenue. And so what you see in these developing countries is the heavy reliance in the initial phase in increasing consumption taxes like the value-added tax. Now, the value-added tax, it's so good that, of course, it raises some other issues. And one of the issues is everyone gets hit one way or another by the value-added tax. And one of the key parts of the pushback is not really just from the fact that you have to justify using your tax revenues. That's important. But you're also affecting the whole income distribution. And the issue here is, can you, in some sense, protect the most vulnerable households from that? So expanding coverage of the VAT is key, but sufficient attention needs to be paid to actually developing your social protection system to protect the most vulnerable. At least do no harm. Raise the revenue, do no harm, use the revenue to promote growth, which is the biggest engine for reducing poverty. So it's important that the VAT, and I think there's plenty of room for improvement in countries in this respect, that the policy process focuses not on we want to increase revenues, but we need to increase key spending to provide services that are crucial for the population. To do that, we need to get revenue. So the conversation should start with the spending and not with the taxation. In practice, that's not always the case.
To what extent should international corporations share the blame for inadequate tax revenues in these developing countries? I mean, are they taking advantage of countries trying to attract businesses? And what can the international community do about that?
So this is clearly an issue of the moment. Great concerns about the importance of everyone contributing to the tax revenues. And again, an issue that goes across all stages of development, advanced countries and developing countries alike. The important thing here is, first of all, the countries themselves should not have policies which promote that. So there's plenty of room to deal with issues of tax avoidance and tax expenditures. That is, things that are legally in the system which facilitate very aggressive tax planning. Legal, but very aggressive tax planning. So there's plenty of room to clean up the system within countries. What's much more difficult is things like tax competition, where countries basically push themselves to the lowest common denominator by giving these tax incentives to large corporations. Again, it's a policy issue. Combined with aggressive tax planning can lead to a lot of revenue losses. We've seen corporate income tax rates go down. We haven't seen corporate revenues necessarily go down an awful lot, which is interesting. But what you do see is people, at least a perception and often the practice of moving large sums of money around, and that can't be good. Now, the challenge here, of course, is you need international cooperation to play the game, the strategy properly, because the incentives are to go to the bottom here. So collaboration, coordination is important. The International Monetary Fund and others have a big role to play here. For example, the Collaborative Network on Tax, which involves, say, OECD and the IMF and others, is really important to give a kind of common approach, a common push to get countries to recognize that this is not the way forward. They actually, things matter in terms of attracting these firms. It's much less the tax competition. That helps, but it only helps to move money around. It doesn't tend to move jobs around so much. So it's really important that it's the other things that of the packet, part of the package that helps these attract these big firms. Good investment in infrastructure, good rules of law, good property protection, simple tax systems, transparency, lack of corruption. These are the things that really dominate. And I think a lot of this falls within the domain of the countries, but definitely room for coordination across countries. And IMF, OECD have a key role to play here.
And so the people that are most affected by tax policy in any given country, especially in the developing world, are the poor. And so how would you suggest a government goes about reforming their tax policies when they're scrutinizing things like energy subsidies and food subsidies? How do they go about doing that without, you know, making their vulnerable population even more vulnerable?
This is a key barrier, but not so difficult to overcome in a technical manner. Doing it may be different and more challenging and more politically, which means you have to be in a political frame of mind when you're designing these policies or advising these policies. The crux is, can you protect the lower income groups from the adverse effect of, say, an increase in price due to a VAT? We talked about VAT earlier. Again, at the center of this is, can you develop a social protection system, a social safety net that actually protects these people? The most cost-effective way of protecting these people is actually through a dedicated social safety net. And it's widely accepted that cash should be a big part of that. Of course, there's other services like nutrition services where knowledge and behavior change matters, other types of support besides income transfers. But income transfers are a big part of that. I would typically argue that to people who say you can't afford a social safety net, a good social safety net doesn't cost much. Some of the biggest safety net programs in the world, take the Mexico, the program is called Prospera. It's been around for a long time, covers about a quarter of a third of the population in Mexico. With reasonable transfers, doesn't cost more than 0.5 of a percentage point of GDP. This is huge. A good rule of thumb here is when countries are really unequal, it doesn't cost much of the pie to protect the bottom part of the income distribution. So we know where we want to go. That's not the problem. A nice point here as well is when things are very unequal, a simple consumption tax with a lump sum transfer to everyone actually achieves a huge amount of redistribution and is not really administratively difficult. If you can't get cash to people, you can't really do very much. Yeah? So there are plenty of options here. And in terms of whether you can afford it, well, you can't afford not to do it. A lot of countries use energy subsidies as a way of protecting their population from volatile international prices. These are among the most inefficient and inequitable forms of protection you'll ever find. They're hugely fiscally costly. So plenty of room for improvement there, plenty of room for improving the inefficiencies that exist in the current places, a big challenge in low-income countries where really coverage of any form of safety net is not there, often crowded out by the high cost of energy subsidies.
So the idea is to replace energy subsidies with direct cash transfers?
Direct cash transfers should definitely form part of the package. It's not the only thing you want to give. You want to be financing education and health. The program I referred to earlier, which was Prospera, actually gives cash transfers, but conditions it on children being sent to school, staying in school, and at making regular attendance at health clinics. Investment in children, we know, is one of the biggest returns, social investment returns around. We see that in developed and developing countries. Child welfare, early childhood development, early childhood education is the one area that there's massive agreement is a high social return. And the governments have a very important role to play. So it doesn't have to be just cash transfers. It should also could also be linked to other sorts of services or accessing these, which affect growth, also address the intergenerational transmission of poverty, puts a barrier there, breaks the link between you and your parents, that your parents are in at the lower income groups, but you can get out of it with investment in the education.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
David Cody heads the Expenditure Policy Division in the IMF's Fiscal Affairs Department and is author of Creating Fiscal Space, an article featured in the December 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND to find the magazine online or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast.